Haircut 100. Love it. Right here on The Brew. It's Radio 3 for a Tuesday afternoon. Time to say hi to our friend and business futurist to the stars, Maurice Misolowski. How are you?
Yeah, good. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday to you. Question I've never asked you before. What do you actually do? Now, joking aside, there's a reason for that. And Maurice and I have been chatting a little bit this morning, and it seems to me that Maurice and people like him are in great demand at the moment from big businesses that you think would already know this kind of stuff. Fill me in, Maurice.
Yeah, look, if big businesses knew this stuff, I'd be out of work. And we could talk permanently, we could talk all the time. So I work under the title of a foresight strategist. I've done it for the last, I don't like to admit, for the last 30 years or so.
Because business futurists, you know, I know what it means, but it sounds a bit Mystic Meg, but foresight strategist. If I was a CEO, I'd be like, yes.
You'd be happy to sign the check to that, wouldn't you?
I would.
Yeah, and that's generally what it does. So futurist is the title I use on stage, and foresight strategist is the title I use in corporates.
Yeah.
Both the same thing.
Mm.
My stock in trade is really the stuff that we go on about every week. It's about thinking about what the future might hold for everybody, and in my case, specifically for a client or an industry.
Do you ever put statistical answers to the questions they may ask you, or do
absolutely.
You ever say, I think it's going to be X, Y, and Z?
It's both.
Ah.
So it's part art and part science. I mean, you can't predict the future. I don't try to. I don't say I do. But we can prepare for it and we can provoke for it. There are things, again, we talk about them every week. There are things that are likely to happen, things that are almost certain to happen, if you could say that, and things that even though people get really, really excited about and jump up and down about, most probably will never have an impact.
Mm.
And in business, and I think in life as well, it never hurts to be sensible about them. Are these things really impactful? Do they make a difference? Are they important? Should we worry about it today, next week, next year, or maybe never? Kind of put all those things in a duck in a row. And for a business's viewpoint, because it's important, they have lots of people depending on them for their wages and their livelihood, lots of customers who want their products and services, governments, all those sorts of things. So you have to make sure that what you're doing is really the best version of yourself and it makes sense into tomorrow. Continue to be profitable, continue to be able to do it. You know, take some bets, some hedge bets ahead of time so you get there first, maybe, or second, depending on what you want to do. It's all that kind of stuff.
So I think you've probably given away your toolbox in our conversations through these years, lots of top tips and stuff like that. But, my point here is, without demeaning the foresight strategist industry, you'd think they'd know this stuff. But it's brilliant that they have people like you to come in. I mean, are they thinking at this stage of the game, bearing in mind it's all about AI and change and disruption, are they thinking they're about to miss out on something or they're not equipped enough?
It's a bit of both. The reality is it's for every industry. I can sit here and I can say I should be able to do my own tax returns because I know numbers and I kind of know, you know, tax law, kind of, sort of, but am I the best person? It's not what I do all day, every day. I don't really specialize in it. So perhaps it's better for me not to. Same as doctors, you know, lots of people go to Google advice.
Sure.
Please do, but only to a certain extent, very, very minor extent. Otherwise, people, humans, doctors are still important. It's the same thing, Phil. We can take educated guesses, but this is what I do day in, day out. I've done it, as I said, for many decades. I kind of know, you know, my vernacular is I know where the bodies are buried. I've seen a lot of the tech. I've actually seen the tech. This dates me, but I love using it anyway. The first tech I ever reported on or thought about or talked about as being something that would change the world was the mobile phone. That's how far back I go. And the introduction of PCs. So I've kind of been through those loops. I've seen the GFC when things were bad. I've seen good times. I've seen technology come and go.
Yeah.
I know where labs are, where technicians are, where people, you know, nerds and geeks hang out. And I can kind of make it easier and take a more educated guess than many clients.
Yeah, is there an opposite of disruption? Because I found a fascinating article the other day, and it goes like this. Whatever you now find weird, ugly, uncomfortable, and nasty about a new medium will surely become its signature. They're talking about stuff like CD jittering, 8-bit sound, things that we now consider groovy, but they were the norm, you know, and we hated them when they were there. Why couldn't you get your cassette to be more pristine audio-wise? But now we want cassettes. Is there an opposite to disruption?
I don't know. I truly don't know. I mean, there is it's stagnant. You know, there are lots of words that are the opposite to it. But I think what you're talking about there really is the nostalgia of it too, not so much the technology itself.
Yeah.
That long after it's finished doing what it's doing, it makes us feel something or makes us reminisce about something. And that's a key to this as well, really trying to figure out what's the next thing that gives you that nostalgic, even though it's new and innovative and different, but still ties back to that human need of nostalgia or love or food or clothing or whatever else it is.
Funnily enough, the bloke behind this notion, this article, is somebody who was a real innovator, and that was, of course, Brian Eno. You know, we have to have apps now to recreate the, what they call the instant cameras, Polaroids, that's
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, and they're making big comebacks now. I mean, Polaroid cameras in some version or other, whether it's that, you know, brand or another, are really making a big comeback. The film on that's expensive to buy now, always was, but still expensive now, and very kitschy, you know, very, very seen as being, you know, part of the in club. And we've talked about this a lot too. Nostalgia for vinyl records is just huge. I've seen the cassettes that we used to have. I cannot believe it. Vinyl records, I can understand. But I've seen cassettes make a comeback now and be somewhat valuable. Listeners, we're not going to make millions out of them. But
they're
people
really
are
coming back.
Actually. People are buying them. They're actually paying dollars. I mean, not hundreds, but they're paying dollars for cassettes now. Before, you couldn't throw them out fast enough.
Yeah.
So lots of things are actually making their way back from this nostalgic pit that we have.
But they're things, according to Brian Eno, that we used to moan about anyway. But yeah. Now that thing they're long gone, we treasure them. It's bizarre, yeah, isn't it?
And yeah, but it's the nostalgia of it again. I think it really is that humanity. The fact that we whinged about them means that we actually love them. We were endeared to them.
Yeah.
And we kind of miss it. The reality is if we went back to it full time, I think we would hate it again. And we would hope it would go away and be superseded.
Those 1990s yeah. video cameras and stuff. Anyway, back to where we started. I'm asking you this question about how come all these big industry boys are coming to people like you for advice. I'm asking at this particular time because are some of them feeling that they are swamped with the notion of moving forward, of course, with AI?
Yeah, the reality is that really at the moment we are in what I call another Wild West era. It was the equivalent of the mobile phone, it was the equivalent of the PC, it was the equivalent of the internet. Mm. All nonsense, all useless, nerds and geeks should just get over themselves. Let's get back to what we were doing before stuff. But AI is exactly the same. We know that it is going to change, and this is a dramatic statement, but it is going to change humanity forever. Better or worse, we can argue about, and we should. I'm not suggesting it's all going to be good, but we will change it forever, like we did the internet, like the PC did. The difficulty is now that lots of people have seen these epoch changes and perhaps not made the best, you know, decision when they came around. They ignored them a bit, got too excited maybe, whatever it is. And this time they're trying to be a bit more sensible about it. Mm. And again, there are no rules for this because nobody really knows what AI will become. Nobody really knows what it can do. And it is overhyped to the hilt.
I think one of the things that it can do in people's beliefs is the jobs that they do.
Yeah, look, it's nonsense.
Yeah, right.
It can do some of the tasks. First of all, it's nonsense because wholesale jobs are not going to disappear. It will unfortunately take away some of the routine jobs that people have, and there's nothing good about that. It's the same as we don't have stenographers anymore. What's right. a stenographer? Nobody knows. We don't have receptionists very much anymore. I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying it's the evolution. It just is what happens. But the reality is, honestly, that 85% of the jobs that are around, I'm talking about jobs 9-to-5 people go to, love, do really well at, fulfill themselves with, 85-90% of those are going to be around for at least another decade, most probably way, way beyond that. What will change is some of the ways that they do some of the things inside that job. That's more likely.
I just got a message here from one of our listeners, Althea, who says people are going back to CDs because they are sick to death of Spotify and algorithms and AI nonsense. I can see something in that.
Yeah, I absolutely
When you say nonsense, it's all the legal stuff and Spotify kicking you out, and I think that's what she means.
I would take that as part of it, but I also think the nonsense is, and maybe this is just me and romantic notions of it, but like, there was something really wonderful about listening to an LP end-to-end.
Sure. So many people would agree with you listening.
You can do that on Spotify. I know that, but I don't. When I had that bit of black vinyl in front of me, you actually sat there and you listened to it. It was kind of like a chapter, and every song was a chapter, even though it didn't seem to be. There was something about that wonderfulness of sitting there and playing it over and over again. I know we can do it in Spotify. We just don't. So I think part of what she's saying, yes, is about the business model, but I think it's also about that side of it too. But with the cassette, we put it in, we've made a commitment to listen to this thing, and we love it from end to end.
I think people are kind of... I'm going to go back to that, kind of sick of the cold business of it all. I can't explain it any better than that.
No, I know what you're saying. What appears to be happening, and this is part of the question you asked before, do we know what we're doing with all this AI? The answer is no, because we seemed, even though, as you said, we can't put words to it, we seem to be having decisions made for us a lot lately. We seem to have given up a lot. We don't listen to the whole LP. We go to Spotify and it picks a song that we love or we've chosen it, and then it plays something else that's akin to it or something else.
Really,
from
rather
our,
it didn't.
From our,
but I think we can stop it doing that, or can we?
Well, we can, but we don't. I mean, I don't. I mean, I sit there and I yell at the thing because it plays me the same five songs over and over again. I'd like to hear something else, but by the time I've gone to do that, my whole desire to listen to music's kind of moved on and I haven't bothered. But I think it's that kind of notion that we've given up some of our thinking, some of our decisions to AI, and it's like being in a car if we're using Google Maps or something in the car. We're increasingly, even though we don't think we will, and we'll say as adults we don't, but many of us do, we just listen to what it tells us, turn left, turn right, go here, go there, and we just do it. I think there's something in that, and I don't think that's a good thing. This is part of the world of tomorrow too. How many of our decisions are going to be made by this AI thing and how many are going to be made by us?
Well, as many as we let them. Let it, I suppose.
In a couple of weeks, I'm actually doing a research piece, a considered research piece now on that. A couple of hundred people are answering the survey as we speak.
Yep.
I'll have that in a couple of weeks to answer that question of exactly what decisions, how many decisions we're willing to make and what we want AI to think about us. But as a teaser, there are 35,000 decisions that you and I make every day. 35,000. And that's some of them we think about, some of them we don't. In other words, left foot first, right foot second. We don't think about those things. But they're a decision that we make. And our body makes decisions to breathe, even though we don't think about it. And then there are the stuff that we do know. What will I have for lunch? What color, you know, do I want my next jacket to be? When am I going to talk to Phil? So 35,000 decisions we make. A great number of them are actually going to be now made by AI over the next decade or so, influenced by AI over the next decade or so, or we will staunchly say that these are human ones and we'll have to think about how we make decisions into the future too.
So I'm going to bring back my thing about, are we growing gills, you know, devolving? Well, to a certain extent, how much of this is just going to turn us back into lazy so-and-sos?
This is really up for debate. I read a piece yesterday, which doesn't make it true, but there was, again, an interesting research. This is only a couple of years old, so it really isn't what's called longitudinal. It hasn't looked long-term at it. But it argues the exact opposite of what most people, maybe even me included, would say. And that it argued that using AI in education actually was making students smarter, not dumber.
Oh, yeah.
Because what it was exposing, or what it is exposing students to, is information that they might not have otherwise seen, heard, or worked around. And yes, we can argue that they, you know, it may be plagiarism as we understand it. It isn't, but maybe called plagiarism or cheating or copying. But this research report said it was actually opening up students when they were ready to hear the information, to hear it and be exposed to it. It was interesting. I'm not arguing either side. You know, we can do both, but it was interesting to say already that there is research going into whether AI is better or worse in some industries.
Well, that's very obvious.
That we do things.
I mean, one upside could be that it gets their creative juices flowing. They get inspired by this technology. They want to dive deeper into it, all that kind of stuff.
Well, they do, and it also goes down to the notion of how we learn. There are different learning, what's called different learning modalities, and some students like to learn by doing, some like to learn by reading, some like to learn, you know, by creating stuff, and each one of them's absolutely 100% valid. What this AI can do is it can actually give the information that's appropriate to that student in the way that she or he likes to learn it. And that's something that teachers, even the most wonderful teachers, just don't have the time. They have the ability, they have the desire.
Yeah.
Just don't have the time to do it 36 different ways for a classroom of 36 students.
Well, you've just thrown some brilliant stuff at us there, because my thing about why are big industries, who you'd think would know better, why are some very quite nervous, to be perfectly honest. I mean, the answer, I'm wondering if some of them have had such success in the past, great flows, and yet they've just discovered their corporate trousers are around their ankles.
Yep, and that's absolutely true. There are also all sorts of new competitors on the horizon because there's new ways, different ways of doing things.
Yeah.
AI is supposedly, like Spotify, you know, like the big debate that we were all a part of, whether music was ever going to come back, whether the industry was going to fall apart, and we didn't think it would survive for about 5 or 10 years. Spotify came along. I know it only pays cents on a dollar what artists would have got before. Not a perfect medium, but there are many of those sorts of things coming along with AI. There are a great number of tasks, a great number of new businesses, all sorts of things that are happening around what were once solid traditional businesses with traditional ways to do it. Banking's a really good example. That banks now are, especially where we are, I assume it's the same in Hong Kong, are just closing their branches. You know, actually going in and putting your cash on the table and saying, put this away for me when I want it.
Few and far between, but very welcome.
Yeah, just don't exist anymore. It's really only, it's not transactional. It really is now conversational. Mm. And that's an example of where technology has really played a different part in it, because we now get money, use money, spend money, save money differently than we did before using technology.
Right. Before we say goodbye, just
steroids.
If you can, think of perhaps one of your super big clients, just in general, of course, that might fit into the category I'm talking about. And what is their one question, whether it surprises you or not?
It's the biggest question I get is, what will AI do? What will humans do? It's this thought of, are we going to have to sack our entire workforce?
Because
we're going to get AI to do everything. And some governments are making that nonsense. Our Victorian government made that statement today. They're getting rid of 1,200 jobs because we had the budget come out in Victoria.
Oh.
They're getting rid of 1,200 jobs, and most of those are going to be replaced by technology. That's a nonsense. Just a nonsense.
What do they mean then, Maurice?
They want to do. Oh, it's what they mean. It's a way that they can sweep the rug, you know, the idea of getting rid of people under the rug and saying that, yeah, we'd love you, but we can do it far more efficiently. To me, it's a devolving of service, which is not a political statement. I just know how this merry-go-round works because I've seen it before when PCs came in, everybody else will sack our staff because these little robot things will do everything for us. They just don't. They won't.
Yeah, and these are the people that have the big, big rooms, but they don't really understand AI.
Exactly. And that's the conversations that we need to have. Where is it sensible to understand that people can do less, technology can do more? It's not a conversation about getting rid of people. That doesn't make sense at all.
Well done, Maurice, for sidestepping my initial question, what does Maurice Misiolowski do? But that means we'll have to do it again next week and find out.
We can try.
Hey, well done. Take care. Lovely chatting to you, our friend Maurice Misiolowski. MauriceFuturist.com if you want to find him online and read his blog and all sorts of bits and pieces. Anyway, awesome stuff. Mainly cloudy.